can tell you that I plead the fifth.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Lock her up, lock her up.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Talk back to the Devil's Advocates, the live J6 postgame party. We got to find former U.S. Attorney as our guest. James Santel is the man. Jim, I was 52 years, 1 week, 2 days, 13 hours and 9 minutes old when I found out my U.S. senator was a traitor to the Constitution, to democracy, to his oath of office. But, you know, there's more to talk about than treacherous, traitorous Ron Johnson. Jim, do you think the American people are being moved by this? I like these January 6 hearings far better than, let's say, the impeachment, because there's not Republicans breaking the flow and inserting malfeasance and false information in real time. You get to see the whole case played out, not in 5 minute, you know, skip every 5 minute increments. Jim, do you think this is moving the needle?
I do. And for anybody who's watching even bits and pieces of it, you'd have to come away, if you watch a 20-minute segment here or there, you have to come away with these special messages that are repeated over and over again, which is, again, no big lie. The president knew about this. The president was told about it repeatedly. And then all of these efforts with that knowledge to reach out, both internal to the White House, to the Department of Justice, folks in Washington, D.C., the vice president, and then also beyond Washington, into Arizona, into Wisconsin, into Georgia, this effort to do exactly what you know is wrong, but an attempt to get the election in your favor. That's the message that comes through at bottom line from each one of these witnesses. And you don't have to sit there and watch it for 2.5 hours, as most of the rest of us did today, to get that message. You also have some very, as we talked before the break, you've got some very compelling witnesses here. They're government officials. They're normal people. They're poll workers who found themselves victimized by this president. In many ways, that too would be a part of a sentencing hearing, if you will, a victim impact statement. When Lady Ruby and Shave Moss are describing the impact of what the president did by identifying their supposedly illegal activities, and that's also hugely impactful. What does it show? It shows an intent. It shows an intent to hit other people, to affect other people, without any care for them, and only to benefit him. I do think it's hitting, yes.
Jim, you brought up Lady Ruby and her daughter, and I think for me, that was some of the most compelling testimony that I heard. You know, these other folks, you know, you kind of signed up. You know, if you're a Braffin's perjurer or his deputy, you know, this is what you do, and you're going to get some slack and whatever. But if you're just you know, volunteering, you know, trying to do something good, as a 60-some-year-old grandmother coming in to volunteer her time during a pandemic, I didn't do that, Jim. I didn't want to go anywhere near polling stations or anywhere where there's lots of people in the middle of a pandemic.
No, but you left that to me, but go ahead.
Yeah. But she went in, and I know, Fantasy Brian, you pulled the sound. I just want to play it for the audience, Jim, and get your take. I thought, for many reasons, this was extremely compelling. Let me just a little backstory here today. Earlier, I was at a Women of Influence awards ceremony. Our pal Maggie Dawn won an award as a Woman of Influence here in Milwaukee from the local community here. And to hear some of the stories of the other winners and as women, what they go through in their professional lives and trying to, you know, to be the best they can be and how they went through and got to where they are, it is entirely different for women in this world, certainly, than it is for men, especially white men. And we have, in this circumstance, two African-American women volunteering, or at least one volunteering, perhaps the daughter was being paid, but going out and doing this work for the community, to engage in their civic duty, and then to be personally attacked by the white male president of the United States. It was just such outrageous behavior for me, Jim. If you would bear with me, Brian, if we'll play that cut, I believe it's number 8.
There is nowhere I feel safe. Nowhere. Do you know how it feels to have the president of the United States to target you? The president of the United States is supposed to represent every American. Not to target one. But he targeted me, Lady Ruby, a small business owner, a mother, a proud American citizen who stand up to help Fulton County run an election in the middle of the pandemic.
Jim, I applaud Lady Ruby and all the other volunteers and poll workers that you know, do that kind of work that are now just because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time to be attacked by this president. And my concern ultimately, beyond for their immediate safety, is for our electoral system. I mean, if this is how people are going to be received and attacked by the losing party, who in the hell would want to go and engage and be a poll worker, Jim?
Right, exactly. And that we talked about this before, right? That's the deterrent impact upon this. I volunteer every polling, every election to do just this, and I'm not dissuaded from doing that by this. But an awful lot of people look at this and say, you know what? I could be Shade Moss. I could be Lady Ruby. I was just doing my duty as well. And if I happen to be on some videotape and someone gets a hold of it, and I am passing, as I said, probably a little bit tongue-in-cheek at the start of our time together, I'm passing a ginger mint, and in fact, somebody looks at that and says, no, you're passing a USB drive, and you're engaging in election fraud, and misconstrues all the things that are in this visual presentation of what I was doing legitimately on behalf of my community. I'm going to think twice. I'm going to think three times about going down that road. Why do I need that kind of not only response, but now as we learn harassment, threats of physical harm, being obliged through the direction of the FBI to stay away from your home. Why? Because you're engaging in public service. This goes far beyond simple advocacy about who won or who lost an election and the legitimate processes by which we get there. This is going to the very focus of how we elect people. It depends fundamentally upon human beings coming forward. Yes, volunteering, maybe getting paid from time to time, not inappropriately for doing their service, but doing what we necessarily have to get done. It sends a very chilling message. Again, the shame of this that should be on the president and other people is profound. I suspect it will not hit as it would any other normal human being.
Jim Centell, our fine guest, I was checking out our competition, turned her down to Righty Whitey Talk Radio. And as fate would have it, the same host plays in both Milwaukee and Madison, as both Dom and I do. And I was listening to her guest, Cleta Mitchell. Cleta Mitchell was the guest, the counter programming to the J6. And they were selling spots or at least encouraging people to come out to the big event being led by Cleta Mitchell on the 24th. And apparently Ron Johnson is the speaker of honor on Friday, the newly exposed traitorous senator from the state of Wisconsin. But they're going to train people, they said. They're going to train people how to run elections and how to monitor elections. And this is their newest effort, because we can't let happen what happened the last time. But here's my question. When you've got a broadcast outlet and they continue to propagate the big lie, and this isn't a cable news outlet, Jim, this is, FCC regulated broadcast media. When they're out there literally lying to the American public, lying and promoting the big lie, and they were going to follow that up with some anti-vaxxer conversation later in the show. But Jim, am I misplaced in feeling aggrieved as a broadcaster when my competitors are airing that kind of, let's call it BS?
Not at all. And again, I believe your license, their license, subject to review by the FCC, right? And comments by the community and this kind of thing should be a part of that, not only immediately, but whenever licenses come up to do that. That's the process for doing this. And beyond just that sense of being aggrieved that you legitimately feel, Mike, the other part of this, of course, is that, what is the authority to do this? When you are engaging, when you are a poll worker, there are folks who are, there are city clerks, there are county clerks who are doing this work. And it is a governmental function. It is nonpartisan. It's nonpolitical. And they are the ones who are responsible for recruiting the poll workers, for doing the training, for doing the processing of how elections work in America. That is the rule across across the nation. So I wonder out loud. Now, you can do training of election observers. That's a different sort of thing. But are we talking now about getting people in positions of true responsibility, like me and others, when we quite literally have people coming in and voting, so that you can do something inside the system to affect the ultimate result? I certainly hope not. If you are, in fact, doing that, you're engaging the same kind of anti-government, and I would argue, arguably criminal behavior that undermines our elections. So it is dangerous. It is dangerous. And it's one thing to promote voting. It's one thing to encourage people to volunteer at their polling places and doing apolitical, nonpartisan things. It's another thing to be motivated because you think that there was a big steal of the election, which is not true, as you said, and all of this premised upon a fundamentally, as we heard again today, a fundamentally completely unsupported view about recent American history. It's dangerous, it's scary, and it should be condemned.
Well, it's only Cleta Mitchell's eighth such seminar here in the state of Wisconsin, Jim, so I'm sure nothing to worry about. I wanted to turn our attention to the U.S. Supreme Court. A ruling came down today on choice schools. And, yeah. Jim, I think this is a question I've asked before. How is it that we, the state taxpayers, with the separation of church and state, can pay for students to attend church schools effectively? And the U.S. Supreme Court said, well, because it's constitutional, of course. Jim, were you surprised by the ruling?
I was not surprised by it, only because it's consistent with what the Supreme Court has done. About a year or so ago, a case out of Montana had to do with scholarships. They likewise favored the religious folks who wanted to partake of a publicly supported scholarship program. So here today, Carson versus Macon, we're in the state of Maine. Maine permits parents of students in areas where there are not public schools to enroll their students in private schools using government funds. And that's okay. But the only prohibition on that that Maine established was it can't be a religious school, because that, according to Maine, and I think according to many, many people, would be in violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, right? Government should not be affirmatively supporting religion. Today, a majority of the Supreme Court said, nope, that's just fine. And to do the opposite would be discriminating against those religious schools and those families, and that this is their free exercise clause. And so, as Justice Breyer, who will not be on the court much longer, said, we're placing primacy on the exercise clause as opposed to the establishment clause, and we're coming out in favor of religion. It's consistent with what the Supreme Court has done recently. There's another case out there that's going to come out very soon, maybe Thursday, maybe next week. This is the football coach who's praying. My strong sense is, once again, the exercise clause and his capacity, his ability to pray publicly in a school setting, admittedly in a football game right after it, is probably going to take precedence over the establishment of that prayer inside an academic setting, admittedly a football game. I think we're going to see this again as soon as next week. It is the trend of the United States Supreme Court these days.
Jim, I had at least one final question. Darryl Brooks Jr., the Waukesha assailant, is now claiming not guilty by mental disease or defect. I didn't think you could just claim that.
You can't. And so the answer is there's a whole lot more. You simply can't say I am insane, sort of in the colloquial way of saying that. You've got to establish that. Plainly, there's got to be evidence to do that. The judge can take evidence based upon psychiatric examinations. There can be a contest about that, a hearing about that, and all the other things that surround this. What have you said since the time of the horrific event in downtown Waukesha, right down the street from you? What other things about your life would suggest that and here's the standard, you do not appreciate the nature of the charges against you, and second, you cannot assist in your own defense? That's a pretty high standard. So simply invoking it doesn't mean you get it. It's finally a judicial determination. We're not there yet with respect to Mr. Brooks.
Our fine guest, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney. Jim, thank you so much for coming around. You know, I was really just trying to help build a defense for Rojo.
Thanks, Jim.
We'll keep working on that and other things. We'll look forward to talking with you again soon, gentlemen. Take care.
Thanks, man.
More Devils. We'll be back.
I went to an Ivy League school. I'm very highly educated.
I wish you weren't a liar.
I'm an extremely stable genius.
I just want you to know I hate you.